Welcome on to the next edition of the Dunked On Basketball Podcast season previews. We go to the upper Midwest today to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks with one of the first NBA writers that I ever met, Jeremy Schmidt. Jeremy, we met at Sloan in 2012, and we had a conversation about maybe the whitest team of the last 35 years, the 1990-91 Milwaukee Bucks. Do you recall that?
I do. I think that was the only time. I might have gone to Sloan twice, but I do. I didn't have a lot of those kind of conversations.
Surprisingly enough, well, that was a team that always stuck out in my mind because they had, I'm going to try and get all the guys, let me know if I missed any. Brad Lowhouse was on that team. The starting front court was Fred Roberts, Frank Borkowski, and Dan Shays. They also had an aging Jack Sikma on the squad as well. And I believe they somehow won 48 games and were the four seed that year.
Yeah, I think that was the last year they made the playoffs for a long time.
Yeah, that's true, huh? It was really like a 10-year drop for the Bucks, wasn't it? For like 91 to like 2000, maybe?
98, 99 was the lockout year. It was the first year they got back in. That's right when they just started to kind of blossom into that fun team of the early 2000s.
Yeah, that was a team that I always wished could have done a little bit more. I was actually just watching that Game 7 where they lost to the Sixers in 2001 and kind of thinking about that team. And who knows what would have happened if Scott Williams hadn't got suspended for that game. He was suspended, right? He wasn't injured?
Yeah, he got suspended for the final game, Game 7. And, yeah, they had actually beaten the Lakers, I think, two out of three times or whatever. Or maybe it was just they played twice. I think they beat them both times that year. So it would have been, I don't know, a lot of people in Milwaukee think they could have put up a fight at least.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that they could have beaten that team because that was one of the all-time great playoff runs that they were in the midst of. But, yeah, I mean, I think they were starting Irvin Johnson in that game, and then he got into a ton of foul trouble. They kind of had Tim Thomas playing the four. They really just were getting killed on the offensive glass and kind of got out-toughed in that last game, as I recall.
And I think Mark Pope got thrust into a larger role, or maybe Darvin Ham.
Darvin Ham
right
definitely.
Now. But they were very undersized. That was a thing. You know, when Williams obviously was not in, you know, his prime or anything, but for him, you know, for the Bucks, he was a big difference maker. He could shoot from the short corner, and he was a good rebounder, and he just provided the toughness that they didn't really have.
Yeah. So, and I think that was he was really their only good big man. He struggled with injuries in the latter half of his career, but he was relatively healthy that year. But anyway, enough reminiscing. Let's talk about this year. First of all, where I like to start with these a lot of times, and I think maybe we should probably focus on the second half of the year after the Carter Williams trade, is how good was this team last year? That can give us a window into maybe how they might do this year, trying to adjust for the new additions, which obviously are significant, but I think it's important, especially when you consider that they're a little bit of a different team once they acquired Carter Williams last year.
Yeah, it's important that you know that it is kind of it was two different teams essentially last season. In the first half, they were a real feel-good story. Obviously, they had only won 15 games 2 years ago, and everybody kind of wrote them off as even a potential playoff team last season. They really overachieved in the first half. Obviously, at the trade deadline, they made that large trade. They acquired Carter Williams. They gave up Brandon Knight. Those were kind of the main pieces of it. And everything went not according to plan from that point forward. I think after the trade, they went 11-18. So they were no longer, you know, the sharp-shooting, really strong defensive team that kind of took the league, not by storm, but certainly overachieved so significantly in the first half. In the second half, they just really, you know, they were relying on their bench a lot. Jared Dudley had a real good first half, but Brandon Knight was a very good player. He was a borderline all-star. A lot of people thought that he should have got in, especially after some of the injuries. And once he was gone, they didn't really have the same kind of, you know, he was more or less their creator at the end of the clock. He wasn't great in that role, but he gave them someone that could shoot the ball and do a couple other things. Carter Williams, obviously not known for his shooting ability. He finished pretty well. He was, you know, pretty good at getting into the paint. He was a better player for the Bucks than he was for the Sixers, but he wasn't able to cover for some of the the fall off and that should have been expected from the bench in the second half.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that bench unit in the first half of the year really drove a lot of that unexpected improvement, and you had to expect. I mean, Dudley obviously is a good player, someone who's better than his box score numbers might indicate, but guys like Jared Bayless, OJ Mayo, who were off to just such scorching starts, I think they were always going to kind of regress, but this is a team that after that trade was made, they kept up, they still had the second best defense in the league, 99.4, but they actually were outscored by 1.8 points per 100 possessions and had the second worst offense in the league, I believe. Let me see. Yeah, third worst. No, that is not true at all. That is actually the fifth worst offense. There are four teams that were worse than them, but still 97.5 points per 100 possessions. Really bad offense. A lot of people, kind of the reductive explanation for that was that the spacing that Carter Williams provided wasn't nearly as good as what Knight was giving them. Is there more to it than that, or is that pretty much what it was?
I don't think it's as simple as that. I mean, you couldn't expect Jared Dudley averaged something like between 8 and 10 points for the first couple of months of the year, through January, I believe. In the last 2 months of the year, he was averaging under 4 points a game. You know, his three-point shooting dipped. I hear him looking in the month of March, he shot 12% on threes.
Yeah, and maybe that was that back injury.
And he was out for a while, yeah. So he had the back injury he was dealing with. You know, it's just Jared Bayless struggled too. They really struggled as a three-point shooting team overall in that second half. Bayless got to a point where he wasn't even attempting threes anymore. And without Dudley and having replaced Carter Williams for, you know, with Brandon Knight, they lost, I think, too many pieces that kind of kept them afloat offensively. And I don't think it is as simple as it's just, you know, the spacing changed so much. I think they were due for a correction in certain areas, and they didn't have enough to kind of counteract that correction with what they acquired.
What did you make of their playoff series against the Bulls? You could say on the one hand they were down 3-0. They got completely destroyed on a historic level in that Game 6 meltdown. But on the other hand, they played a lot of those games close. Game 3 went into overtime. They won Games 4 and 5. Even the first couple games, they weren't getting smacked or anything. How did you come away from that series feeling about this team? Were you satisfied with the effort, or were you sort of thinking that this is a little bit disappointing?
It was hard to be disappointed because the whole season was just such an overachievement in the first place. I think they had the largest win improvement of any team in NBA history. They had won more games by the All-Star break than they won the whole prior season. So it's hard to be disappointed with what they did in the playoffs. Obviously, you know, losing by 50 points or whatever it was in the Game 6 was, you know, at home, even worse, was really, really tough to watch. But, you know, they got farther than anybody could have expected. The one thing that was kind of a bummer about the playoffs is that I think everybody wanted to see Giannis get more and more involved and kind of lead them in the playoffs. Obviously, he's kind of the guy that everybody pins. Him and Parker are who Bucks fans pin the future on, more or less. And he wasn't so involved in the playoffs. You know, he was still effective, but he didn't really take over games the way anybody wanted. So not having that was kind of a disappointment. I think everybody wanted to see him at the forefront of what they were doing. But they kind of got back to what worked in the start of the season. Dudley came back to life in the playoffs and made a big difference. Bayless was okay, not great. But Mayo kind of ended up more or less being their go-to option often in the fourth quarter. And when that's like, you're not going to win a lot of games with OJ Mayo in the playoffs as your go-to option. And then, of course, Rose and Butler had some big games. So they fought hard, and it's hard to be disappointed with what happened. But there's a little bit to build on for sure.
All right, so now moving on to this year, enormous summer. I think Greg Monroe is the biggest free agent in Bucks history by a mile, right?
For sure.
Yeah, so did anyone really see that coming beforehand, or is that just an incredibly pleasant surprise?
It was hard to see it coming just because he is by so far the biggest free agent in Bucks history. They never went out and got players like that. They never even got into conversations like that. You could tell.
Yeah, why did he come? Why does he say that he came there?
Well, you could tell this whole offseason was going to be a little bit different. With the new owners, the Bucks are getting in more conversations, but especially with Jason Kidd, the Bucks are involved in way more conversations than they ever were previously. There was a lot of rumors about Tyson Chandler heading to Milwaukee to play, you know, his ex-teammate Jason Kidd to play with him and play with what, you know, the guys that he had put together. He has a lot of connections across the league, and I think that certainly the influence of Kidd was a big deal to Greg Monroe.
All right, so he now is presumably going to be the starting center. Jabari Parker is coming back from a knee injury. I think he's going to be limited in time the first couple months of the year, so it seems like. And then, you know, they've got Carter Williams, who only was there for the second half of the year. Giannis is looking like he's kind of done some surgery on his jump shot. It's looking a lot better. You know, what do you think this team can be this year now, and, you know, how might they be different from last year in terms of what they can do?
Well, you mentioned a lot of moving parts and a lot of guys that need to learn how to play together. So the expectations are very high right now. I think a lot of fans in Milwaukee are thinking fourth, fifth seed is entirely possible. That might be a little bit high for them, especially if they're going to kind of scuffle out of the gate. It's hard to envision them coming out right away and, you know, going 10-2 in their first 12 games or something like that. This is a team that's going to have to change its style a little bit, and it's going to have to learn how to play together. They're going to have to learn how to play through Greg Monroe as well. Certainly, he didn't come here to be a second or third option. Obviously, he's going to be a huge focal point. And the Bucks didn't really do that much posting up last season. They actually, when they went into the post, it was typically Kendall Marshall or Michael Carter Williams. You know, their guards got in the post quite a bit. Giannis, if he had a mismatch, even occasionally Chris Middleton. Usually, it was their guards. You didn't see a lot of posting up. I mean, if you look at season over season, John Henson's post-ups decreased by 75% or something like that. So their biggest post-up threat was him previously, and he barely did it at all. So they're going to have to kind of learn how to work through a big guy in the post and how to react around that. Now, we talked about shooting. They still don't have a lot of shooting in that projected starting lineup. If they start Carter Williams, Middleton, Giannis, Parker, and Monroe, I mean, you have essentially three non-three-point shooters out there around Monroe and Middleton. So it's going to take some figuring out. Certainly there's a lot of opportunity. Those are all young guys that should be, you know, they should get better, and they should get better as the season goes on. But it's going to take a lot of time for them to learn how to play together and how to be effective.
It's a really hard group to forecast for some of the reasons that you looked at, but also you look at who's going to get better. You would think pretty much everyone on this team. Maybe Jabari is going to take a little bit to come back, but presumably he was able to work on his jump shot, which especially from three, which was one of his weaknesses last year. Maybe learn a little bit more defensively. So the hope is that, especially being so young too, this is another thing, actually, it'll be a little bit of a tangent. I'm of the opinion that tearing the ACL is much better for you if you're like 21 or younger. Guys who do that seem to come back much better than guys who are a little bit older. And obviously, the older you get, the more it's a problem. But, you know, like Baron Davis tore his ACL in college, and you never would have known it.
For sure.
In the NBA. So what's the prognosis now with Parker? Are all reports glowing? What was he able to stay in shape from a body composition standpoint while he was out, and what do you think it's reasonable to expect from him this year?
Well, the Bucks hired a new member of their training staff over the summer that specializes in ACL rehab. I can't remember what her name is right now, but she was working with a consulting company out of Australia, and she's, you know, specializes in ACL rehab. And one of the things she had Parker do to kind of get his mind right mentally and get some rest, but also like exertion physically, was he hiked in the, I think it was the Andes Mountains, over the last month or so of the break. He went into the mountains and just took some time there. So I think that they've been very cautious, but they've been very observant and creative with his rehab. Certainly, it's a huge priority for them. John Hammond said just before training camp started that, oh, you know, if he might be in a situation where he'd play 30 minutes, maybe we'll have him down at 15 minutes. I don't think he meant that in a literal sense. I think he was kind of speaking like, this is the type of caution that we want to use with him. That being said, the first week of practice, he was a full participant. They had a three-hour practice one day, and he went through the whole thing. I think he only took one back half of a two-a-day off, and I think that's all he's had off so far. He has not played in a preseason game yet, though. It's not entirely clear why the Bucks are kind of – I mean, they're just being cautious with it, more or less. So I think, I mean, I expect him to be there on opening night. I would be surprised if he wasn't ready for that. If he wasn't good to go by then. If he's going,
you think he's gonna be the starter on opening night?
I would be surprised if he wasn't. If he's already going hard in practice, and you know, Jason Kidd's a man who cares about his practice. It's not a walk in the park by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah, I think if he's going through that and it's going well, the Bucks had a scrimmage for the fans, and Parker looked good. He played in it. He had a big dunk in it. You know, he looked like a guy who was healthy. You know, he didn't look like, oh, he's hobbling around.
How's his body right now? Because, you know, that was a big concern for him. He has the kind of propensity to put on weight. I've seen some reports, actually, that he was way more ripped, but I haven't really gotten a chance to see him yet. Have you?
Classic 10 pounds of muscle situation, I think. You know, like the everybody.
Yeah, and that was actually that was a little concerning too, because I had heard he's up to like 255, 260 almost. And yeah, the report was that it's muscle, but when you're coming back from an ACL, there's a little bit of a concern there as well. But I mean, I think ultimately the test is, you know, what does he look like? Is he cut? Does he look heavy? Like, what's the story?
I don't think he looks heavy at all. I think he looks cut. He looks like he's in good shape. I think he's probably, you know, when he came into the league, he was somewhere around 255. So I don't think he's much beyond that now. And if he is, he's a strong, healthy looking 255, 260. So it doesn't look like he put on any weight. It looks like, you know, everybody from all accounts, this guy, you know, he's such a hard worker. And not only is he a hard worker, but you know, everybody I've ever spoken to within the Bucks organization is always, they never stop talking about what kind of guy he is. And you know, he's very genuine and wholesome and very observant of his training and regimens and exercise. He's not somebody who's going to, you know, get fat and lazy, especially when he has an injury that, you know, he wants to come back from. So they're all optimistic about him, and he does look pretty good.
That's fantastic to hear. I had him as number one on my board last year. I thought he was off to a tremendous start, but what makes him special is his shiftiness and his change of direction as a guy at the power forward position. So, you know, we've got to make sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll make sure and see whether that's back or not, but it sounds like it's going as well as it possibly could. Another key issue, which I touched on slightly earlier, is Giannis. What do you expect to see from his game this year, and does he have a jump shot yet? Because he kind of shot a bunch of threes his rookie year, didn't shoot any threes, and was horrible when he did shoot them last year. Where's he at now?
Yeah, they shelved it last year. They were like, listen, this isn't for you. We'll get there, but now is not the time. But by the end of last season, I want to say in the last month or two, I want to say the last 2 months, he was shooting probably close to 50% on, you know, the 16 to 23-foot jumpers. He had kind of expanded his range out there, and he was willing to shoot one or two a game. So it wasn't like, you know, he shot four or five and he hit a few. He was pretty good on those longer jumpers by the end of the season last year. So he spent a lot of time working on that this season. He was okay, not great, in the FIBA international, in the championships with his shot there.
Yeah, I thought he looked better during that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's still, you know, he's not going to be lights out. He's not going to be knocked down, you know, in their second preseason game.
Because he was at the point where the Bulls weren't even guarding him in that playoff.
Absolutely,
series.
Yeah. And that's frustrating to watch, because he is such a difference maker when he gets the ball and he can get to the basket. You know, a few guys have the physical makeup that he has, and he really puts that to good use, drawing lots of fouls, and you know, he's got a lot of that kind of ability. So adding that jump shot is a big deal for him. He didn't look great. He hasn't looked great so far in the preseason games from a shooting perspective. Last game, you know, he barely grazed the rim on one of his 3-point attempts. He looks like he still definitely has some work to do. But you know, he's another guy that seems like he's going to put the work in. But you know, with that jump shot, it's such a tricky thing. Some guys, they work at it their whole careers and it still never really goes anywhere. So you know, I think he's made honest slides where he's going to, or honest strides where he's going to be at least an okay mid-range jump shooter. And you know, if he can keep improving that 3-point shot, is kind of, that's going to decide what his ceiling is. You know, if he develops that and he gets to be a reliable 35-40%, well, even not even 40, 35-37% 3-point shooter, boy, this guy seems like it's really the limit for him at that point.
Is there anyone who might be a regression candidate on this relatively young team?
Well, I don't think it's unreasonable to assume that Chris Middleton may slide back a little bit. He's been pretty good. He's been really, really good. He's a great complimentary player. He's been a pretty good defender. He takes, you know, he's one of those guys who does a great, great job at taking anything that's given to him. He adds a little bit to his game, but he's really good. You know, he's just, he's worked and he's developed into such a solid 3-point shooter. But I think it's, you know, he may have kind of hit his ceiling last season. He's kind of like a good, like, 12, 13 point kind of guy, four, five, six rebounds. And I just don't know if there's a lot for him to keep going upwards, especially with, you know, Monroe there now, and if Giannis and Parker are going to be taking on bigger and bigger roles. From a numbers perspective, I could see Middleton sliding a little bit, but maybe not from an efficiency standpoint, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I do. He got a lot of pub last year when he was mentioned by Daryl Morey at the Sloan Conference, as or someone mentioned to Daryl, actually, I think, that he had a great defensive RPM. Daryl famously said, oh, I think he's actually more of an offensive player, in kind of a cryptic way. But regardless, do you think that those numbers overstate his defensive impact? I think he's great being able to switch his help defense, but he also kind of got lit up one-on-one at times by Jimmy Butler in the playoffs.
Well, the one thing that I've always noticed with him is it doesn't seem like he has especially quick feet. If you just watch him guard guys on the perimeter, the average shooting guard is able to drive by him. You know, if he closes out, they're usually able to get by him. And if they're just kind of matched up on the wing, guys can get by him. He's not super duper quick. He's smart and he's physical and he can adapt really well. And he's at least competitive at guarding a bunch of different positions. But, you know, he's not that classic kind of lockdown guy in the frame of a, you know, if I'm sticking with the Bucks here, a few years ago, Luke Bamute. Bamute could pretty much switch on to anybody, and he was quick enough and shifty enough and strong enough to stick with whoever the case was. I don't think Middleton's quite like that. I think he is probably a little bit overrated defensively, and I think that those metrics do overrate him a little bit. But even if he's overrated, he's still – I'm not saying he's a bad defender by any stretch of the imagination. I just don't think he's the guy – you know, he's not a Tony Allen or a lockdown-type guy.
Yeah, and he has been money now from three for 2 years in a row, and really – one of the best 3-and-D guys, maybe the best 3-and-D guy in the East that you can point to. So the Bucks have not been a team that's gotten a ton of national attention over the last few years. That may be changing this year, but who is someone who might be a little bit underrated? I guess we talked about Middleton already. Are there any other people other than him that kind of stand out to you as being a good player that people may not know about?
Well, I think there's some mysteries on the Bucks roster. They haven't really seen anything from Damian Inglis yet, and he was someone that they really regarded very highly when they drafted him. He was the first pick of the second round 2 years ago, and he was hurt all last season. He had a foot injury he was dealing with. He didn't look great at Summer League this year, and he hasn't made much of an impact yet in the preseason, but he's someone who has a chance. When he was drafted, they really, really were high on him. As kind of another one of these guys in the Bucks that's, you know, can kind of positionless, can guard anyone from 2, 3, 4, was quick, had the ability to get to the basket, really passed the ball well, smart player. A lot of kind of different skills are what drew the Bucks to him in the first place, that versatility. And that really seems to play well with Jason Kidd, especially on that defensive end where they have four, you know, they're so good at forcing turnovers because they have all this length and they have all these guys that can kind of fly around and make plays. So if Inglis is back healthy and what they expected out of him in the first place, you know, he could be someone that makes a big difference. But, you know, a foot injury that keeps you out for an entire season could be the kind of thing that really impacts your career in a negative way. So we'll have to see where that goes.
He was an interesting guy to me at the Hoop Summit because he kind of like looks like almost LeBron James-like when you see him in person. He's like 6'8",
Jack.
240. I mean, he's not, but he somehow doesn't have like any jumping ability at all. Like, it's really surprising. Like, you see him and he looks like a guy who's gonna have like some real springs, but he's not really a very explosive guy at all.
He's like more power than explosion.
Yeah. He doesn't necessarily have to be if he wants to fit in to kind of this Bucks ethos of long guys who can do a lot of switching, as you mentioned. I worry though, is that going to be negatively impacted now that your starting front court is Greg Monroe and Jabari Parker, or can they still have this elite defense that they had a year ago. Now they lost Jared Dudley too, who I think was a big part of that. Zaza Pachulia, not an explosive guy, but took charges and I think was a quality defensive center. Is the defense regressing something that's a real concern this year?
Well, anytime you're like the second best, were they second ranked last year? I think if they weren't second ranked, yeah, they were second ranked. So anytime you're that high, certainly there's not a lot of place to go but down, right? So I think they're still going to be a good defensive team. I think Jason Kidd is one of those coaches that knows how to get that defensive effort out of his group. And what he does well is he gets that out of them without grinding on them or wearing them out. So I think they should be in good shape defensively. The thing with Monroe that will be interesting to see is if they can kind of turn him into a Zaza Pachulia. So he's never going to be a big shot blocker. That's not part of who he is. But obviously Pachulia, not much of a shot blocker either. Can they get him to just be in the right place and get his hands up? He doesn't need to jump. He doesn't need to get out of position. Can he just get to where he needs to be? He doesn't even necessarily need to take charges. But if they can have him get to where he needs to be and be willing to commit that effort, that can make a big difference for them. And, you know, they're still going to force a lot of turnovers. Whether, you know, Giannis and Middleton and Williams, those guys are all going to have length advantages at their positions most likely. So they should be able to get in some different passing lanes or make passes difficult for defenders. And if they can take advantage of that extra, you know, milliseconds that buys them, then Monroe just needs to kind of shift over and get to those right spots. And if he buys in, you know, I don't see why he can't be a good defender. I know he hasn't been great thus far, but, you know, that's essentially what Jason Kidd's job is, right? You know, let's get the best guys we can get, and let's see what we can get out of them. And if we can put them in a position to succeed, we'll be successful.
Yeah, and with the guys that they're going to have around him, maybe Parker accepted, they are putting themselves in that position. And Monroe also, when he played as the center in Detroit these last couple years, when he wasn't playing in units with Josh Smith as the three, he actually, I think, was more passable than some people might think, given the fact that, as you mentioned, he's not really a traditional explosive rim protector type.
He was stuck in so many wacky lineups there. So it's hard, like you said, like when Josh Smith out there, it's hard to know both offensively and defensively exactly what they have. I think he's kind of established who he isn't defensively, and, you know, he's not going to be that shot blocker, but he's still young enough, and there's still enough opportunity for him to be at least a passable defender, and I think that's all the Bucks really need him to be. Because no one, before Zaza Pachulia got to Milwaukee, I don't think he was collecting Defensive Player of the Year votes, you know? So it's not impossible that a guy can transition into a new role. And they still do have John Henson behind him, and Henson had a really strong year last year. He's a big-time shot blocker. That doesn't necessarily mean he's always a great defender. The Bucks were certainly a better defensive team with Pachulia on the floor last year, but Henson does give them another dimension defensively.
What do you think are the key positional battles here? Where, as you're a follower of the team, you're thinking, all right, who's going to be playing at these positions and who are involved in those battles?
I think the backcourt is there's the most opportunity for clarity in the backcourt. It's clear Michael Carter-Williams is going to be the starter, and it's clear that Chris Middleton's going to be the starter. But behind those two, the Bucks have Jared Bayless, O.J. Mayo, Grievous Vasquez, and Rashad Vaughn. Now, Vaughn's a rookie. He might get the short end of the stick. He's been very good in the preseason, and Kidd had some really, really positive things to say about him after last game. But, you know, Vasquez was a guy they acquired this summer that I think a lot of people are excited about. He's certainly probably the best three-point shooter among the group. Mayo has been, you know, he's been a consistent scorer in the NBA, and last season he was actually a very, very good passer, too. He's done a good job feeding the big men for alley-oops and things like that. He seemed to have real good chemistry with John Henson, especially, and he seemed to accept his bench role pretty well last season. So it'll be, and there's certainly a lot of room for maneuvering. I don't think Kidd would be hesitant to, he started Grievous Vasquez and Carter Williams together the other day. I don't think he'd ever be hesitant to play any combination of those guys together, with the exception of maybe like Mayo and Vaughn probably wouldn't be the only guards up there. But I think they've put themselves in a position where they can ride hot hands off the bench, and they don't have to be tethered to just playing Jared Bayless all the time or just playing Grievous Vasquez, because those guys are on the bench for a reason. They're generally going to be inconsistent, and you know, I think the Bucks like the ability to have the flexibility with their lineups.
Who's going to play backup four for this team?
It's probably going to be
assuming Parker's the starter.
Yeah, it's probably going to be some combination of Giannis sliding down there occasionally, and then, you know, maybe some Johnny O'Brien, maybe some Damian Inglis. And in some situations, I guess it wouldn't be impossible that maybe they slide Monroe down and play him and Henson together, or they slide Henson over there. It seemed like Jason Kidd didn't really like to go to the two big lineups last season, but, you know, I guess we'll have to see what happens this season. Given the kind of influx of guards, it's more probable that they'll play smaller lineups more often. So Giannis kind of acting as a de facto backup four with, you know, two of those guards in alongside Middleton, who slides down to the three. That seems like a lineup that they'll go to frequently. But as far as straight up backups go, Johnny O'Brien might absorb some of those minutes if he's improved over last year. Damian Inglis has the opportunity to grab some. I think it's kind of an up for grab situation among those two. And then if they decide to go with two bigs, that's where Plumlee and Henson have the opportunity to play too.
Yeah, they really only have on this roster, I think, two bigs that you are proven guys that you would want to have in a rotation, and that's Monroe and Henson. So it wouldn't shock me if they go with Giannis at the four more often, because they have all that backcourt depth that I hadn't really thought of. I mean, especially if they want to get Vaughn some minutes, Mayo, Bayless, and Vasquez are more, those guys are all guys who have contributed in NBA rotations before. Let me ask you this.
Let me just on one point that you said there. Giannis actually played more time at power forward last season than any other position. So that's pretty, it certainly seems like a good fit for him, and he really poses a lot of matchup problems. He had a real good duel at the start of last season with Zach Randolph where, you know, Randolph really struggled. He couldn't guard him on the perimeter. It was a complete mismatch. And Giannis actually held up fairly well when Randolph was trying to post him up. But do you not see Plumlee as a viable rotation player?
The Bucks don't seem to think so.
Yeah. Well, I think that might be a numbers game for him. I don't know. I think he's viable.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's true. But it certainly, he seemed like he was totally out of their plans last year. He certainly has started in Phoenix and did okay. So I did kind of wonder why he basically was a total non-entity. Maybe we'll see him more. But I think that
went back to he didn't want to play two things together. That seemed to be the biggest thing to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what I say too. I mean, he's a center. You know, no two ways about that. And Monroe and Henson are both centers too. So I guess I kind of think of him as being third string. They don't really have someone like Ersan Ilyasova was last year who can provide a little bit of spacing and also, you know, still do some of the big man things as well in more of a hybrid. Those guys are just pure bigs without really much range. Are they going to miss Ilyasova, by the way? I think they might miss his shooting. He shot almost 40% on threes last year. I think he did shoot 40% on threes.
Yeah, he gives them – the problem with him is just you never know night to night or month to month what you're going to get out of him. It was really tough, I think, to rely on him. But I think in general, he was more good than bad last season. And, you know, you mentioned the three-point shooting, but then on the other end, he did a great job, as he always does, drawing charges. He's every year among one of the best players in the league at drawing charges. He gets in the right places. He's a physical player. But, you know, he's got his shortcomings offensively. He struggles to finish around the rim. He kind of attempts a lot of flip shots and quick shots and, you know, not an athlete by any stretch of the imagination. But I think they probably will miss his ability to stretch the floor a little bit, no question.
What's the crunch time lineup for this team if you're Coach Kidd?
I think that they purposely have the flexibility to do different things in crunch time. I think it's going to depend on who's playing well, but the guys that they're probably most often going to rely on are Monroe, Giannis, Parker, Kidd, or Carter Williams, and Middleton. You know, the same starting lineup. I think that's ideally your finishing lineup as well. But Kidd certainly showed no reservation about going with the guys that he just thought were, you know, in the flow of the game, doing the best. So it's probably going to change night to night, to be honest, but in general, it seems like the starting lineup should be the finishing lineup with a team like this.
We talked about improvements, and one of the guys we should have talked about is Carter Williams. Is there any indication that his jumper is coming along at all?
he's been willing to shoot it in the preseason. I mean, he's not.
I guess, you know, sometimes that actually is an indicator that it's coming along, at least if you're shooting like you expect to make it. Some guys, you know, they are deluding themselves in expecting to make it, but, you know, a lot of times if you show up to a pickup game, right, and if a guy takes 2 3-pointers, even if he misses them, I kind of think, like, all right, maybe I need to guard this guy. He's shooting it like he knows what he's doing, at least.
Absolutely, and I think when you talk about those guys who delude themselves, I think that was Carter Williams in Philadelphia because he was not shy about shooting 3-pointers there.
Yeah, and they told him to do that, too, in fairness to him.
Okay, yeah. So if that being the case, when he got to Milwaukee, they were not as friendly about, go ahead and shoot threes, get him up, let's just watch you develop. He only shot 28 threes in 25 games in Milwaukee. So that was, you know, significantly less than he did in Philadelphia, and he only made 4 of those 28 threes. So he was brutal last season, but, he, you know, in the preseason, I think against the Pistons, he took 3 attempts. I think he made 1 of 3. So if he that would be a huge success if he could hit 1 of 3. But, you know, I expect maybe some improvement, but I don't think he's suddenly going to overnight turn to a 40% three-point shooter.
Yeah, I don't think that they really have anyone in the starting lineup who can run a pick and roll that you can't just go under on easily. And when teams can do that, you're preventing a lot of times the initial opening that's going to draw help. Now, maybe a lot of the post-ups might be the way that they're going to do that, but still, even with the post-ups, then you can bring help easily and you can help off of these guys. So I definitely really worry about their spacing, and they have a lot of names on this roster to be sure, but there's also, they could be a little bit less than the sum of their parts, and I think there's a number of East teams that are like that, but the Bucks are one of them that come to mind.
Yeah, and I mean, it seems like there's going to be a lot of pressure on Middleton as the only shooter in that starting lineup, really, and he occasionally handles the ball. It's not really a strength of his. I don't think he's a great option as a ball handler in a pick-and-roll scenario, so it's going to be tight in there, but Kidd has shown, and Joe Prunty, his kind of offensive assistant, he's shown the ability to be creative and getting guys open, certainly on set plays. So I think that's going to be pushed to the limit. The good thing that they have going for them is, you know, Carter Williams, Monroe, Giannis, these guys are all really good passers. You know, they have good vision. They have the ability to move the ball. So they should be able to do some things from a ball movement perspective if it presents itself. You know, they should be able to find the shot as long as they're all playing unselfish, as the Bucks did last season.
I actually think even Parker is a pretty good passer, that people were really down on his passing coming out of Duke, but he threw some nice passes, and his reputation in high school was that he was kind of one of these do-everything guys, really unselfish. He's kind of morphed into a scorer more as his career has gone on, but I think he's someone who has a nice passing vision as well, and he actually could be someone who could work as a ball handler in pick and roll as times. I think he has had the ability to do that, and if his he can definitely pull up, you know, from 20 feet on that shot. The question is whether he is going to be at the point where he can do that from 3 off the dribble. That's probably too much to ask this year, though, I think.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, he definitely has shown the ability to do stuff as a passer, and I think, you know, there seems to be a really strong relationship between Parker, Carter Williams, and Giannis. Carter Williams and Giannis especially they get along like gangbusters last season, so I really think that this is going to be an unselfish team, and it seems like the pieces are in place for them to kind of pick up from where they left off in the first half of last season with the ball movement and the unselfishness.
Do you think that Vasquez might replace Carter Williams a lot of the time in crunch time? Like, I kind of see that they're going to feel like they need to have a little bit better shooting, because Vasquez at least can be a spot-up shooter, and they have a lot of other guys who can initiate the play. But then you're giving up a lot defensively, too, and I know Coach Kidd prides himself on that end of the floor. What do you think there?
I think there may be times when that happens, but I really think that Kidd is invested in the development of Carter Williams, and I suspect that he's willing to sacrifice in the short term to reap the long-term benefits of keeping Carter Williams in the game and keeping him developing and trying to work with him on situations and get him better. It seemed like he was influential in getting Carter Williams to Milwaukee. So I would be shocked if Carter Williams wasn't always, not always on the floor to end games, but probably 4 or 5 times to 1 with Vasquez. Maybe Vasquez in obvious 3-point situations is coming in, but other than that, it would surprise me if Carter Williams wasn't in more often.
Yeah, and that was my first thought, too. And I also will say that I think now, for the first time maybe in a long time in Milwaukee, there is more of a long-term focus. John Hammond just got an extension. Kid, I'm sure, feels very secure after they traded basically for him and signed him to a long-term contract. They have all these young guys who they're looking to develop. I think the focus isn't so much on this year and anymore, especially now that the arena deal is done as well. So maybe we will see a more developmental approach from Kid. On the other hand, they traded away a first-round pick protected from the Clippers, so it probably won't be that great, but they trade away a first-round pick for Vasquez in the last year of his contract. Presumably, if they're willing to give up those kind of assets to get him, they are planning on using him a lot.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I think they saw an opportunity. I think they didn't put a lot of value on that pick, and they saw an opportunity to give themselves an additional shooter, and that was a weakness that the team had. But to your first point, I think Kidd specifically is very developmentally focused, and not even just long-term development. I think he's short-term developmentally focused. Everything that he said this year at Media Day was almost verbatim what he was saying last year at Media Day. So whether this team is a last-place team or a surprise playoff team, it seems like he takes the same attitude that's just about, you know, as long as our team keeps improving every day, we're going to be in good shape. You know, he very rarely talks about getting wins and losses. He just kind of focuses on, you know, we have a young team and we need to, there's a lot that we need to learn and we need to keep learning and developing and growing. And as long as I think he has the mind that as long as that process is in place and as long as all these guys are buying into it and as long as they're playing the style that I want them to play, we're going to be, and the wins are going to come as a result of that. So I think everything he does is very developmentally focused, and I think that makes him a great fit with a new ownership group. Maybe this wouldn't have gone as smoothly under the Herb Kohl administration, but under this new group where, yeah, I agree with you, he probably feels very, very confident about his standing here. You know, he's friends with Mark Lazary. He's got the contract. Hammond seem to have a functional working relationship where Kid certainly has some say in what goes on. I think he's very confident, and I think it does set them up to think generally more long-term while still looking for opportunities to upgrade in the short-term as well.
So as we kind of project how this team is going to be this year, what do you see as the key strengths that they can rely on a night-to-night basis?
Defense is certainly going to be, you know, still the hallmark calling card of whatever they do.
Yeah, so for people who didn't watch the Bucks a lot last year, can you kind of explain what their system was like, why it was so successful?
Yeah, it was very aggressive. They did, you know, a lot of trapping. They did a lot of trying to force teams into throwing longer passes, trying to use the length that they had to create turnovers. A lot of times, you know, if Pachulia was in there, he wasn't stepping out and trapping necessarily all the time on pick and rolls, but maybe he would drop back, but then they would be able to, you know, send over help often from one of their many longer players that they have. Guys could cover a lot of ground. You know, players on the weak side were coming pretty far over the help line to make sure they're providing adequate assistance. And then if a pass went over, you know, if a team ever tried to pass over their heads, that was an opportunity for a turnover, more or less. So they were very, very good at forcing turnovers. They were, I think, the best team in the league at forcing turnovers, if I'm not mistaken. And that's still going to be a big part of what they do. They were kind of a middling team in terms of pace. So offensively, they weren't so focused on getting up a lot of shots or getting up a lot of threes or anything like that. They were more focused on trying to kind of find the best shot available. I think this season they're probably going to look more, like we said before, they're going to look into the post a little bit more. So, you know, they definitely believe in the post up and being an important function of offense. Kid, you know, he wants to get the ball as close to the hoop as he can. He wants to, and I think that was a big part of acquiring Greg Monroe. So they're going to use him in the post quite a bit. I still think they're going to use Michael Carter-Williams quite a bit in the post when he has a mismatch. Specifically, if there's a guy, you know, against the Bulls with Aaron Brooks, like that type of player, I think Kidd's going to look to get him in the post. And then, you know, Parker and Giannis, when they get the opportunities, I don't think he's going to be shy about posting them up either. There may be opportunities when they try and find the three-point shot a little bit more often than they did last season, but if you just look at the makeup of the roster, that's probably still not going to be a big part of what they do.
Now, if you're an opposing coach, what do you see as the big weaknesses on this team that you're going to try and attack? I mean, I guess we talked about the lack of shooting. I don't think we need to discuss that anymore. Is there anything else you look at as maybe a weak point on this roster?
I think, you know, another thing that we talked about was kind of a lack of depth up front. I think teams that have the ability to get into the post would not be unwise to try and take, you know, Parker and Giannis in there. If you can get those guys in foul trouble, the Bucks, you know, they're going to have to play a lot of small ball, and that may leave them open to opportunities where they're not, you know, they weren't a great defensive rebounding team last season, and it doesn't seem like they're going to be a fantastic one this season. A lot of that kind of rests on Monroe, so if he can grab a lot of rebounds, they'll be good, but otherwise that may be trouble for them. So I think that there's definitely some weakness up front. And then we don't know exactly how Monroe is going to react as being kind of the anchor of this defense. So getting him into pick and rolls and seeing how he reacts to that, that's going to be kind of a deciding factor as to whether or not they're going to be the stellar defensive team again or not.
Yeah, I would say, too, when they go with Henson at center, they can be vulnerable to post-ups from larger centers. But if he's going to be playing mostly bench minutes, that's hopefully less of an issue. And also, they just have so much quickness throughout the roster that if they need to double-team, they can, and they can get back to shooters with their length and their speed. I guess you might say on a normal team that's this young, you might look at their experience and their execution of the defensive system, but, you know, especially I think with the high pressure style that they play, that's less of a concern for this team than other young teams.
Well, and they took to it so well last season. It's just, it's hard to see where the experience issue is going to manifest itself. It didn't seem like it got to them in the playoffs last season. It seemed to be more just a talent issue in the playoffs. You know, they when they fell down 3-0, like we talked about, they battled back and won the next two games. So I'm not sure where necessarily experience is going to manifest itself as a problem. But if they are a young team, so there may be situations in which it does. I'm not aware of what they're going to be yet.
All right. You're prognosticating this team now. It's obviously something you think about all the time for your site. What do you see as the key variables that you're going to be tracking as far as whether they're going to have a successful season or not this year?
You know, are they still going to be a good defensive team? Is Greg Monroe going to be an efficient scorer for them, and is he going to lead the charge offensively? And if he's not, where are they going to get offense from? And the development of Giannis and Parker, how much better are those two guys going to be? Giannis took a huge step last season. You know, when he was a rookie, he was kind of this adorable guy that was very memeable and very gifable and very vineable, but wasn't super productive. Like, he was pretty good, but it was more plays that came in spurts. Last season, he was actually just a pretty good player. You know, he cut that three-point shot out, as we talked about. He still drew a lot of fouls. He was a pretty good scorer on the rim. He got better as a rebounder. He got better as a player overall. Like, his usage rate increased quite a bit, but he wasn't turning the ball over too much, and he was still scoring at a pretty comfortable level. So is he going to take another significant step forward like that? Because that kind of changes the trajectory of the team as again, you know? So are Giannis and Parker going to get a lot better? Is Monroe going to be able to carry the offense? And what kind of impact is he going to have defensively? Can they maintain where they were last season? I think those are kind of the three biggest things that I'm thinking about.
Yeah, and I would throw into whether they can get the shooting out of Parker. And Parker, Giannis, and Michael Carter-Williams, one of those three guys is going to have to be a consistent threat from three, I think. Otherwise, just it doesn't matter how much talent they have. There are just going to be too many bodies in the way, ultimately, for them to be successful. This is a question that came to mind for me. Who do you think is going to be the best player on this team this year?
I really think it's going to be Giannis, man. Like, he just seems so talented. It would just I think he's
like, can he create his own shot one on one? That's kind of the
for sure the
biggest thing
been,
I think is
he's been pretty good about that. I mean, he's not like losing people off the dribble, but he's been. If it's a guy who's smaller than him, he's been able to get into the lane and use his size as a huge advantage and put up, you know, baby hooks or whatever the case may be. And if it's a guy that's bigger than him, he's been able to drive right by them and get into the paint and draw contact from a, you know, a rotating defender or get all the way to the rim. So, I mean, he's probably certainly the most talented player the Bucks have had since Michael Redd. And that may not sound like much of a compliment anymore, but at one point, Michael Redd was really, really good. He was on the Olympic team. And before that, probably since Ray Allen, you know? So this guy has some special ability that, you know, he's only 20, and it really seems to be blossoming more with each passing season here.
Yeah, but there are a lot of candidates to that, right? It could be Monroe. You could even say maybe Middleton, although he doesn't fit your kind of one-on-one offensive option ideal of what a best player is for a lot of people. Just he's so steady in so many areas, and just this combination of his defense and three-point shooting is one that's kind of rare. So there are a lot of potential options there. On the other hand, people might say, well, if you don't have a clear best player, then you don't have any superstars either. And maybe they'll get there, but I don't know if it's reasonable to expect that from everyone else this year. So,
well, that was kind of the thing with the Bucks, like the last 5-6 years when they were stuck in that, you know, not very good, not very bad situation. Nobody had a better 7-12 than the Bucks. You know, that's so long been their calling card. But getting that nobody has a better 1-3, that would make a big difference. So I think that's the team they want to be in the next 3, 4, 5 years, and they're hoping, they're betting on Parker and Giannis to take them there.
Yeah, what do you, this is a bit of a tangent, but let's say they don't really make any changes to this core, and everyone kind of develops the way that you hope that they will. Maybe they make a sub at one position to get a little more shooting. Maybe that's Carter Williams, or you know, they get a center who can shoot if Monroe were to leave in 2 years or something like that. But with this core, if they just develop normally, do you think that this is a very serious championship contender when these guys all kind of come to maturity?
It's just going to depend on whether or not Giannis and Parker can be that classic, you know, top two duo kind of thing. If Giannis, I think he's on a really good path right now. If you look at his age 19, his age 20 season compared to guys like Durant and Kevin Garnett and guys like that, it compares pretty favorably. So if he kind of continues on that kind of path where, you know, maybe someday he's a 25-point scorer, yeah, absolutely, this could be a potential championship foundation. A lot of things have to break right for you, obviously. You know, Kevin Durant's not even a championship foundation at this point, but...
Right, right. But yeah, no, everyone would say that they're a contender,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, a team that you look at as we have the potential to win 55, 60 games and be right there every year. Yeah, I think they maybe have that kind of talent, too. A lot depends on Jabari to me. I actually don't think that Giannis quite has the ceiling that a lot of people do. I think he's not quite a pure enough scorer to really be that 25-point-a-game guy. I would be very, very surprised if he ever averages, you know, he seems like the kind of guy who might kind of get to 20 or 21 and be pretty efficient, but still not be the guy who's creating the opening for you initially on offense.
Kirilenko's
every
a common
time.
Comparison for him.
Yeah, and I think he'll be a better scorer than Kirilenko, but yeah, maybe sort of like a better Kirilenko, maybe with some Scottie Pippen aspects, which, you know, can be a great player, and he can be a great defensive player too. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I see him as just like a monster go-get-me-bucket scorer, but Parker could well be that guy. That's why the ACL injury was so disappointing. He's missed some development time now. Hopefully that won't be an issue, but you have to think that suffering that at least lowers the chances that he ever gets to that level that I think he would really need to be at. He's the true X factor for me. I think Giannis is going to get to be, you know, kind of a lower rung all-star player, but maybe not beyond that.
Yeah, and I mean, we just said, you know, they need a lot to break right, and already they've had one huge thing break wrong. So it's not kind of an ideal first two seasons here. So more setbacks like that. You know, they're really counting a lot on these two guys.
Yeah, well hold on a second. You all won 15 games
yeah.
2 years
no,
ago.
No,
I mean, if you asked me, or if I asked you before the season, you could be in this position now. If I asked you at the start of last season, you could be in this position now. You would have taken that every time. And Giannis had great development last year. I mean, getting Greg Monroe, nobody ever would have thought something like that could happen. So I think overall, you ingrates.
well, it's an interesting idea.
They're doing well.
It's an interesting idea of would the Bucks have been better off winning 41 games last season or having a totally healthy season from Parker and only won 30 games, let's say. Not to say... Like,
yeah, probably
wins,
the latter.
But it's an interesting kind of double-edged sword there.
Yeah, do you think Rashad Vaughn can be a long-term part of this team? We haven't seen that much from him in the preseason. I'm not really that familiar with him, but his skill set would seem to fit in.
I mean, it's, you know, he seems to fit specifically around Parker and Giannis. So neither of them are great shooters, and they have some issues there. He's a great shooter, very pure shooter. has that kind of skill, has good size for his position, is young. It seems to track, but if you just go on the history of guys drafted that low, it's a little tough, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's also, I think, the second youngest guy in the draft behind Devin Booker. I think he basically just turned 19
yep.
in the last couple of months or so. But all right, we went a little bit far afield. Give me a predicted record, predicted playoff finish for this 2015-16 Milwaukee Bucks.
39-43, and
wow,
first round exit.
You, congratulations. If I weren't holding my microphone, I would give you a round of applause because I think you are our first guest to actually come in well under the team's Vegas over-under, which I think is like 43.5 this year.
That seems a little high to me. I think the Bucks have gotten a lot more national exposure than they're used to in the last 6-7 months. You know, with the new jersey design and with the new logo and the flashy.
Yeah, those are sweet, by the way.
Marcus and Gus Johnson, there's a lot of positive things. I think people are a little wrapped up in that kind of stuff. Monroe's addition, obviously. I don't think it's going to be as smooth as everyone expects, but I don't think that season would be a failure at all. If they go 39-43 and Giannis looks great and Parker looks great, and by the end of the season they're starting to click and they're starting to fit Monroe in, you know, that's absolutely not a bad season.
Yeah, I think so. And Carter Williams, too, I think, at least as far as their success in the next couple of years, he just has to take a leap with his shooting.
They need to know by the end of the year if he's going to be the guy for them and going forward.
Yeah, because this is his third year. They'll be able to offer him an extension next fall, and they could always kind of hold off on that, too, and see what happens in the summer of 2017. But there really are not, in terms of cap space, there are not really any upgrades available at point guard this summer. Mike Conley, but to hear everyone say he's going to stay in Memphis, I'm sure they would go after him, but that seems unlikely that he would come. And then 2017, that's when you have Giannis's extension might kick in as well. He also is going to be due for an extension next year. He's the kind of guy that they might want to try and wrap up right away rather than waiting on him, so he'll take up a lot of space. 2016 is actually in some ways a little bit easier for them to strike, but there just aren't the point guard targets out there. So his development over these next 2-3 years, I think, is going to be such a key for them.
Absolutely. It's absolutely crucial.
So 39-43, and I guess I understand why people are thinking the 43.5, because, all right, they're 41-41 last year. They got Greg Monroe. They're getting Parker back. Everyone else is going to improve. They're all young. Yeah, why wouldn't they do better than last year? But that's ignoring the fact that they really just were not good once they made that deal for Carter
Absolutely.
Williams.
And that's kind of what has me most nervous about the whole situation.
But so I guess if they're going to be 39-43, you have to predict then that their defense is going to regress a little bit. Because if they have the number two defense, even if you're like the 20th offense or like the 22nd offense or something, that's comfortably a above 500 team.
Yeah, I think that they're going to be, you know, I think there's going to be two different seasons for them again. It might be a little flip from last season, though. I think they're going to struggle a little bit in the first half, and I could see them kind of catching on in the second half of the next season where guys are starting to play together more, they're a little more comfortable. I just don't think the start of the season is going to be great for them. I really think that they're going to, you know, by the end of November, they might be 4 or 5 games under 500 already.
Yeah, maybe that's true. Although the other thing that I think I was underrating until we really started talking about this is that they do have a lot of depth. I think that they can withstand an injury at basically any position very well. So I think you don't have to worry as much, you know, unless like Giannis
and
Middleton
Parker, I think,
down.
Are the two guys, you know, because that was where we talked about that four kind of swinging 3-4 position. That's the one spot where they're a little thin. They have a lot of guards and they have the three centers, but that one little tiny spot there where those two kind of occupy, they're a little bit thin there.
Yeah, even if Parker goes down, then they can just start Giannis at the four. I think that, and they have so many of those guys. I mean, Vasquez could, you know, he's like a high-end backup, has started in his career. If you have to start him for a few games, I think you're fine. Same thing with OJ Mayo. And you know, even Bayless is okay. I think those three guys, you can kind of push everyone down a level. And I think their bench, just they don't really – that's the nice thing about this team, right, is so many teams have guys who just are going to be bad in their rotation, and the Bucks don't have any of those guys.
Yeah, I agree, and that's kind of that's how the Bucks always are. But this season, they finally have some guys that are more front line in the start of their rotation.
Yeah. So and even, you know, if Monroe even were to get hurt, which doesn't really happen very often, they could bring in Plumlee. Like you said, he doesn't figure to play that much, but he's totally acceptable as a backup center, I think. And Henson is a guy who can come off the bench and start for you in a pinch, totally fine as well. So maybe that's a reason to be higher on them that I hadn't yet considered, is just their depth and ability to withstand injuries over the course of the 82-game season.
Yeah, and like we said, there's four or five guys on the bench that could easily slide into starting lineups. It's just a matter of if those guys can slide in and then be consistent. You know, that's where I'm a little less optimistic about that. I think in a pinch, those guys can slide in fine. But I don't know. It's just a lot of new faces in important parts, and we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, for sure. I would be a little bit more optimistic than you are. I might go 41, 42 wins. I think I said under for them on the over-under podcast, but it wasn't by much. And I think this is getting into my next question of what you think the best-case scenario for this team is. I think that they have a lot of upside because they have so much talent if they can figure out the fit.
Yeah, best-case scenario, 45, maybe 46 wins. You know, maybe if that gets them up to the fourth or fifth seed in the East, I don't think that's totally out of the question. I mean, it falls pretty close in line with what the over-under is. So a 45, 46-win season where they get out of the gate hotter than I expect. They have a lot of away games in December. Usually the schedule softens up a little bit for them in January, February. If they can kind of ride that to a hot finish, that doesn't seem impossible either.
I think their ceiling's even higher, personally, because if they maintain the number two defense, which I think we both expect them to regress a little bit, but it wouldn't be impossible, you would agree, right, for them to stay at that level?
No, it wouldn't be impossible. It just seems so unusual to me that a team would go from 16 wins to 41 wins and then much beyond 41. It seems like that second leap is a little bit more difficult than that first leap there. And I think that first leap gets everybody so excited that people start thinking it's going to be that easy to go to that next level. And I think that's just where it gets a little bit tougher.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that people might be a little bit too excited, but I do think if they could keep that number two defense, which is possible, and then, like, this could be the 15th best offense in the league. Like, is that beyond the realm of possibility that they could be that good?
No, that seems higher than I would expect, just because they do have three-point shooters. But it's not like bonkers by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, and they have some passers. They might be able to make do with the spacing. So if this is the second-ranked defense and the 15th-ranked offense, that's a 50-win team. So I think that it is possible to get there. The odds of them doing that, maybe not as high, but certainly with all the talent on this roster and maybe the chance that some of them could shoot, I wouldn't say that there's no way they could be a 15th-ranked offense. But now we touched on the best case. What's the worst case? You know, San having a bunch of injuries, just kind of guys, it doesn't work out the way they want it to.
Worst case is kind of guys just not gelling, and then, you know, Michael Carter-Williams making no progress. Maybe they ride Vasquez a little bit more. There becomes some, like, hard feelings there. They start to play a little bit selfishly. Even worst case, though, I don't see them falling below 35 wins. That seems like the floor for them, maybe 34.
Yeah, again, there's so much talent on this team, and they have
such
so
a
many
good
capable
coach, you know, Kidd right? Just seems really strong as a coach. It would be hard to
believe. Sean Sweeney, too. We haven't mentioned
Sweeney's
his name.
Sweeney's great,
as
man. That guy
defensive
is,
coordinator.
Everybody just talk about a hard worker. You know, he's one of those classic, you know, never gets out of the room, never gets out of the video room, constantly looking for those edges. People have a lot of good things to say about him.
Yeah, so I agree with you. I think maybe you could say that the defense falls down to, like, you know, number 10 in the league or something, and then they have one of the worst offenses. So that could maybe be a 31, 32-win team. But I agree with you. I think that their floor – I always mistake this. I always say low floor when I mean high floor. But I think their floor is higher than some teams are due to their depth.
Yeah, their depth and kind of – their what we expect to be their defensive prowess, yeah, should keep them pretty high.
All right, so this will be my last question. Lazary and Edens came in. When did they come in, 2013?
No, they came in, they officially bought the team before last season. So maybe that is 2013. Yeah, that is, no, 2014, May of 2014.
Okay, so I guess maybe we can starting with around maybe the Giannis pick. What grade are you giving this front office slash ownership slash management?
It's pretty good. They've done a pretty good job. I mean, at least...
Yeah, that Giannis pick was a coup, right? They got
absolutely
the number one or number two player in the draft at the 15th.
And I think the thinking there was, that was kind of John Hammond saying, okay, I have to go out and sign Zaza Pachulia. I have to sign Carlos Delfino. I have to sign Caron Butler. I have to sign all these guys that are really... They're here to get us to the eighth seed this season, but the draft's when I get to look to the future. And he took a big swing for the future because he knew that was his only chance to do it. So I think it was a great pick by him. Kind of the underrated deal that really, really, really worked out was the trade of Brandon Jennings for Brandon Knight and Chris Middleton. That just
was unbelievable.
You know, then,
that one actually, that we showed, we talked about that as one of the worst trades, at least from the Pistons' standpoint, since the lockout. It didn't really make it into the finals, but that was a coup for them. For
absolutely.
Sure.
And then you think about how they flipped Knight then for Carter Williams, and it's, you know, from a cap management standpoint, that seems to buy them a couple more years with a guy who's roughly on the same level as Knight. So I think generally, you know, B+ at least, you know, there have been some misses for sure. This is, you know, trading Pachulia seems a little dubious. He was very good for them.
Yeah,
last season.
That was just a straight up salary dump.
And I mean, kind of a playing time dump in some ways, right? So this kind of makes sure, this assures John Henson's going to get minutes, and obviously that's someone that they thought highly of. They gave him an extension, and I thought that extension was pretty smart given the way that the market's heading right now. So, you know, yeah, B+ feels more than reasonable.
Yeah, Mike Prada and I talked about that on the Wizards preview. We did a little news, and I think we both thought that is a solid extension for Henson, especially because he might have to be starting on this team if Monroe leaves in a couple of years. Getting Monroe was obviously great,
absolutely.
And everyone kind of made fun of the Pachulia signing, the O.J. Mayo signing, you know, where the hell are you going this year? And then they ended up winning 15 games that year. But then, as it turned out, Pachulia was a fantastic value contract,
absolutely,
for $5 million. And that's why I was surprised that they had to straight up dump Pachulia and couldn't do any better than that. I think if they had maybe just waited during the season, see until somebody has some injuries, like, you know, wouldn't New Orleans have actually given them like a real second round pick right now with like both of their centers injured or something like that? So,
well, I think they wanted to have things solidified heading into camp. You know, they didn't make a lot of moves in that last 2 months. And this is a team that spends a lot of time together in the off season, so it seemed like they wanted to get a jump on things. So that I guess that would just be, that's just me kind of throwing out some theories behind what's there. But then, of course, like if you look at, I mean, just from an organizational standpoint, to move this from B+ to A, obviously securing a new arena was big. This new logo seems to have gone. Everybody seems to be on board with it. The new jerseys are some of the most talked about in the league. Getting that secondary court with the black jerseys, so like, from a organizational standpoint, all of those kind of side things really seem to be heading in a direction that they never seemed to head in previously for them as well.
Everything's coming up, Bucks.
Gus Johnson? Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of things people like going on with the new ownership group.
Yeah, I think you would have to agree that they've done pretty well. Hiring Coach Kidd was pretty good as well.
Absolutely.
So that, and his staff, that's, it's weird people sort of forget hiring the coach a lot of times as part of the grade of management, but he's one that has certainly worked out, and he was a coach of the year candidate a year ago. So anything else that kind of pops out to you about the Bucks this season that you've been thinking about concentrating on that we didn't get a chance to get to?
Thing is just that the Bucks seem to be, you know, I was on the radio earlier today and we talked about this. They seem to be courting the spotlight more than ever. I think they're very confident in what they put together as an organization, what they have on the court, what they have in the front office, what they have on the sidelines. I think they're, you know, obviously they're very confident in what they've done from a visual perspective with the jerseys and the court and everything like that. So I think that the Bucks are kind of, you know, under Lazarie Nedens and Jamie Dineen, they're doing everything they can to kind of make a bigger splash on a more national level, more so than ever. Like, I think they want to be a team that nobody's, you know, that a team they've never been. So that's kind of an interesting subplot that's kind of existing in the back of my mind throughout this season.
All right, well, where can we catch up with you on Twitter, and tell us about the site?
Yeah, so on Twitter, I'm Bucksketball, which is B-U-C-K-S-K-E-T.
Awesome, awesome Twitter name. we know how it's spelled. It's fantastic.
It's something. So, I'm there, and then Bucksketball.com. We'll be covering the season all season long. Maybe less game recappy stuff, maybe more kind of thoughtful pieces about where things are heading and what's going on and some stupid stuff. We got a piece going up today, depending on what day this goes up. we have a piece going up about over-unders for the season, just talking about, you know, is Chris Middleton going to shoot 40% from three again? Is Jared Bayless going to play 1,600 minutes? So we're kind of taking a look at all the guys on the team and comparing them to where they've been and figuring out where they're heading.
All right, that sounds like a good one. I'll have to read that yesterday, since this will probably post on Wednesday. But yeah, thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate that. As for us, you can follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. Now that the games have started, I'm usually sitting around live tweeting. You can get some thoughts from me there. The season previews are rolling on. This is now, I think, our 14th or 15th, we recorded that should already be up now, the Knicks season preview with Jason Concepcion. You know him as Network on Twitter. And then also Jared Dubin was on that. That was a great one. And then I had Ethan Skolnick of the Miami Herald on to talk about the Heat as well earlier today. So those are some great ones.
Heavy hitters.
You want to support them? Yeah, no, we've had some amazing guests. I can't believe how generous people have been with their time to come on the show, and it definitely means a lot for us. So that's really fantastic. If you're going to support the show, the cap space code, all one word, on DraftKings or on SeatGeek are two ways to do so. Let our sponsors know that their advertising is working, and they will hopefully continue to pay me and keep the show on the air. And also, just tell a friend about us. That's another great way to support the podcast. So for Jeremy, this is Nate Duncan. We will talk to you all next time.